That's how we own it. Woo! It's your boy, My Son.
And I'm Tamika D. Mallory, and this is Street Politicians.
Where the streets and politics meet.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What's going on? How you been today?
It's been good. It's been
What's
good.
Going on?
It's been a full week.
Oh, man.
Since our last podcast, it has been a full week.
Full week. A lot going on.
Happened. And this weekend, wow. Everything.
Whoo! We was working, but
we did. We worked a lot this week until Freedom, our baby, our organization is coming together. And a lot of people ask, like, they're like, "How did all of this happen?" Right? Like everywhere we go, people are like, "What's the story of how Street Politicians came about?" Also, Until Freedom, and just the story of how we came together in general. And it's been a 6 year
plus about 6 years, journey. 6 plus years, man. Yeah. Just working, just. You know, I tell people all the time, man, sometimes you meet people, sometimes you have situations, and it's just a calling. You know what I'm saying? You were already doing the work, and I was fresh out of prison, just trying to find, not really fresh out of prison,
not really
but home
fresh.
From prison for a while, and still just trying to find my space, doing music. I was doing personal training.
Right.
You know, I was just utilizing every attribute that I had to try to create a lane. You know, and we connected. At a service event. Shout out to my homegirl, Mita, who had called me to do a service event on a Christmas. And you were there. You also wanted to organize that event.
And Shayna.
It was a lot of people there. Karuchi was there.
Yeah. I didn't know that Karuchi was there.
Free
Jennifer
was there.
Williams.
Jennifer Williams. A lot of different people. Mashonda was there.
Yeah.
You know, shout out to Mashonda. I knew Mashonda for years, but we just started the vibe, and then that's when you wanted to do personal training, because I was a personal trainer. And while I was training you, I started telling you about the music
that I did. Exactly. And then we listened to it as
our
background music.
I was playing the music. You was like, yo, this is dope. And then I let you hear this one piece that I did for Trayvon Martin's mother. Sorry. And you were like, yo, that is so beautiful. I actually know her. Like,
and I'm going to send it,
which
I did.
I'm going to send it to her.
And she fell in love with you.
She fell in love with me. And then you was like, I know my homegirl Carmen goes into detention centers, and she works with these youth.
That's
I think
it would
be
happen.
Dope for you. Introduce me to her. Next thing I know, we were in the Justice League.
I was
in the middle of the street at a march. For,
your first protest.
First protest ever. You know.
And it's been a good... You know, right, but it's time for us to really bring all of what we have to the forefront so that, you know, we've done a lot to serve other people, which we will always serve our organizations that we're members of and, you know, and just all of these other things that we do all the time to support other people's visions. But now our vision is coming to the forefront, and we love our Until Freedom family, specifically our co-founders, Linda Sarsour and Angelo Pinto.
Shout out to my people.
All y'all do is argue
sisters.
All the time.
All day.
We all argue
That's
all
what we
the
do,
time.
And I think that's where greatness comes from. I think when you debate with someone and you have a different point of view and you're able to at least let them understand your point of view, and then you come together and you form like Voltron, because everybody does
different things.
We have different entry points into this work and into this movement, but we all have the same goal.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like with Until Freedom is like a one-stop shop for everything. Yeah. You have people who, we have a lawyer, Angelo's a lawyer, you have Linda who specifically does policy, and she is, you know, in tune with the Muslim community, with the Palestinian community.
She's pretty much, and
her book is dropping. Her book is dropping.
And, so there's a lot happening.
A lot going on.
But it's been a good ride to get to this place, and we have to give love to our sister, our big sister, our mentor. She's not that big, though. She's still a little snack pack.
Cat Trig is a little snack pack from Our Woman TV. Call her Snack Trig, not Cat Trig.
If you don't know Cat Trig, you need to write the
Snack
Trig.
That's a new nickname, Snack Trig.
If you don't know
it,
you need to check her out. But we love our Woman TV family. And so, like I said, this weekend in particular was loaded. A lot of stuff was happening. We ended the week last week with the Senate voting against bringing witnesses to the impeachment trial for Donald Trump.
I mean, that's like a sham. Like, this whole impeachment trial to me is a sham. And I get it, because we have to let the world see this. Like, it has to be documented how far they're willing to go to really undermine the government. Like,
undermine America. The Constitution is being thrown
like,
out right now.
To really see this, like, when you really watch this in real time, it's like you sitting there and you confused. Like, is this really what's happening? Because I know if this was me and you, we would be under the jail.
Well, let's save the conversation for later, because we really need, yeah, we to, need get to get into that. It. But, you know, that happened, and I think, you know, as you're coming out of the week or ending the week with the impeachment stuff just being, as you said, a sham. And then I received a text message actually from Angelo, our partner, saying Bloomberg might make the debate stage. Now, the rules for the Democratic Party had been that you have to have thousands of donations from everyday people before you can make it to the debate stage.
That's right.
Right? Now, all the people of color are gone. Corey's gone. Kamala's gone. What's his name? I was about to call him Fidel, Lord Jesus.
Castro.
Julian Castro is gone. All the people of color are gone. And now
because
Bloomberg,
they didn't meet these criteria.
Because they, well, it's or not some that of they them. Didn't meet the criteria because they were on the debate stage, but it was becoming more and more of a struggle financially, the support that they need. Corey was having a hard time getting his poll numbers up, and you also have to be at least at 4%. Polling at 4% in order for you to make the debate stage. So, you know, they were having some issues and challenges there. But these folks, all of them are gone, and now Bloomberg enters the race, decides he opts out of taking any donations from just the outside public. He's paying for his campaign himself, pouring millions and millions of dollars
over
into his campaign.
Over $120 million in
Okay, in advertisement, right?
Yeah.
And he's now eligible to be in the debate because the Democratic Party has changed the rules now. I mean, it just, anyway, we talk about that later. The Super Bowl ads, a lot of mixed feelings out there about the ads. We can talk about the NFL ads where Inspire Change, which is their initiative that is, it sort of comes out of the Colin Kaepernick situation, the Colin Kaepernick protests. And so Inspire Change is supposed to bring the issues that the players have to the forefront. Along with the Players Coalition. And so they had an advertisement that was shown during the Super Bowl this year that people have different feelings about. And of course, you had Donald Trump. He had an ad where he specifically targeted the black community around criminal justice reform. To me, it was extremely disgusting, but that's a whole different conversation. And then I want to make sure I say this brother's name properly. Gervonta Davis. Mm-hmm. Who is our buddy Chiali keeps telling me that he is a star.
He is. He's
a star boxer. What does that mean?
It means that he's pretty much ranked in the top 10 in the world in boxing. And he's like on the road to be number one. Like
That's Floyd Mayweather's protege.
Yes, he's one of Floyd's protege.
I remember last month, because I was trying to figure out who he is, and I remember last month, all the who's who was out looking good going to a boxing match in Atlanta, and it was him. Okay, so he basically snatched his baby mama, as they say, but I like to say his daughter's mother, out of her seat at some type of event. Looked like it was a sporting event. There were a number of TMT event signs around. But he snatched her out of her seat by her collar. Some people say his hand was around her throat. I'm not sure exactly, but definitely he was in that area. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy online about that, you know, and just what it means and what it looks like and the whole thing. So we can talk about that. And then, you know, last but not least, perhaps we won't get an opportunity to really, really get into it, but I think it's important for us to mention that the coronavirus is spreading, that there is now another possible case in New York. One case has been confirmed in Boston. I remember checking the numbers last week at some point, and it was 11,000 in one publication. By the time I checked again last night, they said 14,000 people in China specifically are, have been affected by this virus. And now we have more cases here in the U.S. Somewhere it said 9. Now it says 12. So not sure, but people really need to stay protected, pay attention. And if you feel like you're sick, go to the doctor and get yourself checked.
ASAP.
And just right now, we're hearing from our producers that there are 17,000 at this point. So, again, I checked last week, 11,000. By the time I checked yesterday, 14,000. And now today, we're hearing 17,000 people and 11 in the U.S. So this is very serious. And I think the important thing for us to know, I was reading the New York Times article this weekend that talked about how China was aware that this virus was spreading. They knew it. And in fact, they chastised doctors who were speaking about it to people who were outside of the hospital. So there was one doctor.
They tried to keep it quiet.
They tried to keep, but this is, China operates on secrecy, hush, silence. They don't like to talk, you know, I'm talking about the Chinese government, not Chinese people. So let's be real clear about that. But they operate on, you know, silency. Nobody don't want anyone in their business. You know, we don't really talk publicly about what's going on within our country. And in fact, there was a doctor who was quarantined on a particular floor with people who had the virus or who have the virus. And he texted some friends who are also in the medical field and said to them, I'm quarantined on such and such floor. This is very akin to SARS. It's a real big situation. And of course, those people went around telling folks. And when the hospital found out about it, they chastised him and then made him sign some type of legal documentation that he wouldn't talk about it anymore.
Wow.
So as a result of them not doing what was necessary and making sure that other governments knew about it so people could do the things that we see now where they shut down travel and also just inform people, if you're going to China, know that this is happening. Because they didn't do that, it's spreading across the country. And, you know, who knows what's going to end up happening. So,
wow. That's a lot.
These governments have power over our lives.
It's really serious, man. We got to pray for the people in China. That's 17,000?
That's a lot of people. 17,000 people.
I keep hearing about the coronavirus, and they say, how many people are actually dying? Is it so?
No.
Is it mutating to this point where they're dying instantly, or is it something that is potential?
So I saw 259 people, and that's at my last check. And I was off already by 3,000 people. 259 people had died. No one in the U.S. has died from the virus yet. So, you know, it seems like it is treatable. But, you know, still, again, how it happened, how it's spreading, what information has been out
serious.
There.
Definitely
a lot of conversations to be had about that. So I guess we'll start with my thought of the day. I mentioned, you said Gervonta Davis. The boxer. And I'm really troubled, Mice. Like, I'm really, really, really troubled because I posted what I saw on the Shade Room and Ball Alert and all of these different sites. I saw that this incident happened. So you know me. Whenever I see a black woman being mistreated, I'm always like, my little spidey senses peak up and I'm ready to go. Because I know that, as Malcolm X said, the black woman is the most unprotected, disrespected person in the world. As I looked at it and I saw it, and for the first time in a long time, I decided I wasn't going to say much. Because, you know, people always accuse me, you always bashing black men and this and that. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to say anything yet. I was going to wait until, this was in the middle of the night. So I'm like, let me wait until I talk to you and, you know, brothers and just be like, yo, do y'all see this? Maybe you could lead the conversation on how this happened and what it looks like. And then I saw his Instagram comment, which he said, I didn't, you know, oh, y'all relax, basically. Yeah, I was aggressive, but I didn't hit her, and I would never abuse her or hurt her like that. But anyway, Happy New Year's, and January was trash. So that was it for me. And the other thing I saw was he was out with some of your friends partying the night after it happened.
How I got thrown in the bus?
Because these are your
some
people.
Some of your friends.
These are your friends. They were hanging out the night of after this incident happened.
Well, I think,
partying.
Well, I think, you know, in defense.
Wait, but my thought of the day.
Okay, get your thought.
And then you got
day.
It. I'm gonna let you take it away from there.
Okay.
My thought of the day was around when I saw his comment. I posted it and I said, is someone going to tell him that this is violence and that this is abuse and it was wrong? Is anybody going to tell him that? And of course, over 2,000 comments are now on my page. Most of them, I will say, I would say like 70%, and that's a low rating to me, are people in general who are like, it's wrong, it's abuse, it's wrong, what have you. And I have to also say, I am very, very grateful and humbled by the amount of black men who are on my page saying, full stop, no, it's wrong, period. Mm-hmm. But there is another 30% of women and men, and a lot of women, not saying more, but a lot of women, who are saying all he did was hem her up a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? It's not really that serious. Like, come on. They like telling me shut up.
But we have to get into this.
But the thought of the day, which I still haven't gotten to, is we need to have, first of all, a big conversation about domestic violence. And then the real question is, like, why don't other people see this as abuse? Like, what is happening that we don't see that as abuse?
Well, we don't see that as abuse. I believe, and what I say is, we've normalized abnormality, especially in this culture. In the culture that we live in, like, you'll watch, because this is common. This is not an abnormal thing. You be in a club, or somebody sees their girl talking to somebody, you'll see somebody grab her, pull her, you'll see girls hit their man, and people laugh, and they put the memes up. And there's never really any seriousness, because it has been normalized in our culture. Is it right? Of course not. I come from a family in which I've witnessed, you know, domestic abuse, so I understand the seriousness of it. But there is a dynamic and a demographic within our culture who have normalized this, who used to getting hemmed up. They see their man and they argue and they put their hands on their man and he grabs her and they shake each other. And this is how they express some level of love. This is a normal thing that I've seen done numerous times with couples who you see together the next day and they didn't get into nothing. They'll laugh about it like, yeah, I was about to break his neck, or yeah, she know better than me. I had to hem her up a little. This is normal, especially within our culture right now. Is it right? No. But is it normal? You see that you have 30% of people who see that this is something that's they used to it.
Yeah, they feel like
they're like, come on, it wasn't like he said, oh, come on, I wouldn't do nothing like that, because to him, just grabbing her like that wasn't anything that was abusive. There was no level of abuse to her. It was just him explaining to her how he was mad. This is how he was able to express. If he didn't punch her, if he didn't hit her, it was okay. And I've argued with men on my page who have watched men fully beat women and say, well, she hit him first, or she's done this. Like, beat her like she's... So the mind state is way different.
Because the big question that folks had is, what did she do? What did she do to make him respond this way? You know, who was she there with? Was she? Then someone said, well, he escorted her out. Mm-hmm. And he probably told her to get up via text or whatever, and she didn't go, and therefore he had to escort her out. So I'm just trying to figure out how people see someone grabbing you by the neck or by your collar and forcefully lifting you out your chair to be escorting. Because escorting to me means you arm in arm, and I can imagine if you doing something crazy, or maybe she texted him something crazy, or she was out doing God knows what. Maybe he saw her on somebody's stories, kikiing and too much, and, you know, whatever. Who knows? I could even imagine him walking up to her and arm in arm telling her, like, we getting out of here right now. You know, I'm pissed off, this, that, and the third. We going to discuss this or whatever. I could see that. But he grabbed – this is a man who is a boxer, mm-hmm. whose his hands are considered to be lethal weapons.
Yes, they are. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. I get it. Yeah. But I also get that there's a... I'm telling you, you can go in the average club and see those type of situations happen all day. And people normalize it.
I'm trying
to
teach my son. The police could be there.
The bouncers, the police won't even... They won't even get involved in it. They won't... Unless... Most of the time, they'll be like, just walk away. They're not going to say there's a domestic dispute. If he was grabbing his girlfriend by the collar and pulling her, they'd be like, hey, calm down. They're not going to arrest. They immediately, because it's normalized within our culture. And I understand what you're saying. But I think we have to really look and be serious about our analysis of this situation. Because most people, especially in the hip-hop culture, this is a normal thing.
But see, but that, okay. So that brings me to my point. And what I said, because I think on the Shade Room, I said, when I saw your friends having a good time with him at the club later on, I said, no one's going to tell him that what he did was wrong.
Well, who says they did?
Okay.
Because all you saw was the picture.
And a video. And I totally respect that, right? I do. But I also feel like that's one of the biggest problems that we have is allowing people around us to get away with things that we really should be like, I don't really want to hang out with you right now if I think that it's possible that you're abusive. Now, check this out. A woman sent me a DM afterwards telling me about another incident with someone very close to her and him. And then someone else came on my page and said some other girl named Ari, that I'm not sure who that is, another celebrity or whatever, you know, influence, whatever you want to call her, that she said he came to her hotel and kicked her door, tried to kick her door in, saying that he was going to beat her ass, right? So now there is...
I mean, but what happens is now he's opened up Pandora's box. Like, and this is what usually happens. If you're an abusive person, then it usually comes out. If you've abused somebody before, and even the most minute situations like this can uncover that. And I wish that it's wrong. I wish that that these are not true allegations, because he's a young black kid from the inner city, grew up in the foster care. He's been by himself, come from the dirt poverty. So, from Philly, Baltimore, my fault, you're mm-hmm. right, Philly, from Baltimore, and you want to see him become successful, but we can't condone things like this, but the reality is, there is a culture that is very toxic that we celebrate right now, and it's normalized, and we have to, of course, we got to call out things when we see it, when we see people do things, we got to call out. But what we have to do is try to start changing the toxicity
of the culture. But that's my question. Can you change the toxicity without challenging? I'm trying to figure out why is it that I didn't even bring this up in my post, although many of the comments was questioning why any other black men who were in that room didn't stop and say, hey, you can't take her out of here like that. You need to relax, my man. You can't.
Because I'm going to tell you the realest thing. In that situation right there, now, if he'd have punched her in the face and somebody got in, sure. I'm sure the woman would have been.
They don't.
Listen to me. But listen, no, listen.
And you know that.
I'm not saying, just listen. I want to give my point out. Is that if he'd have punched her and somebody jumped in for her, she would have been okay. Thank you. But in that situation, I've seen those exact situations where the woman say, oh, mind your business. Mm-hmm. We good over here. And they'll jump you.
So that's the issue.
No, that is the issue. Because people, especially in those situations like that where there isn't any blunt force and punches and things thrown, people don't know how far to get involved in someone else's mm-hmm. relationship, because they have been they have thought that they were doing the best thing. And the woman will tell her to mind her business. We got this. Don't worry about this. Because they have toxic relationships that these things are normalized.
So now we need to be talking. I mean, it just feels
it has to be a full conversation
on us as women.
But I think it's on a relationship. I think people have to restructure this culture of how relationships are handled. Because I'm telling you that 9 out of 10 people that you come from you ask in our communities, especially in the hip hop culture, the young within between the 20 something before, a little bit before 30 or even 30 will tell you that, oh, it wasn't that serious. All he did was grab her by the collar, like he ain't beat her up. Like, I'm telling you that that's...
So, in other words, there has to be a conversation across the board.
Across the board.
I'm personally hoping, in my thought of the day, that my son is being taught by every man around him, every man, that behavior is wrong, number one, that it doesn't matter what she did, that you can't, she's not your dog, she's not your child. Because you're not even allowed to beat dogs, and they've stopped really allowing you to even physically chastise your children. Mm-hmm. Although my parents didn't care about that.
You grab your child by the collar, you ain't gonna get in trouble.
Okay. So, but you still, it might be somebody that says this looks a little whatever and whatever. But I hope that people are telling them this is not the right way to behave. But I also would hope that if he does do it, that there would be a real come to Jesus conversation, and that maybe his friends wouldn't be in the club laughing and joking and having a good time, because basically what that says is it's a throwaway thing. It's okay. Not that serious.
So this is what I want to ask you, and this is a really serious point. When Solange hit Jay-Z in the elevator, did anyone say that she was wrong?
There was a number of articles and people who spoke to the fact that violence, no matter what, is wrong. And in fact,
I didn't hear it. I heard her being celebrated.
That may be what you heard, but I'm just telling you, there were a lot of people. And in fact, and I can find it for you and share with you. And in fact, there was an entire, you know, part of our community, or many people in our community, who argued that should he have been allowed to hit her back because she hit him, right?
Well, I'm just trying to tell you, in our culture, because maybe it was somewhere else, but I'm talking about in the culture where I live, it was celebrated.
But I'm just
Solange was celebrated as, that's right, you disrespected me, you disrespected my sister, we put our hands on you. It was put in music, it was every. There was nobody that I seen of any level of stature.
We didn't look into it before coming here. If you had asked me that,
I'm
going to go back and find it, because I know that there were stories where women were talking and men were talking about violence and how it's wrong and what have you. But what I will say is this. I don't think anyone needs to put their hands on anyone. I think everybody needs to keep their hands to themselves. I don't want my son's girlfriend hitting him. I don't want him hitting her. But I will say this. Black men need to understand, specifically all men need to know, but black men need to know that you got birth from a woman, that you got birth through a woman. And if you abuse the person that carried you and brought you into this world, it's some real scum shit about that.
I hear you, but we have to look at, like you said, what is abuse?
Abuse is... I'm sitting somewhere, and you physically come and decide that I gotta go.
But I'm trying to tell you that it's normalized, and I've seen
women do it to
a bunch of men. Anytime a man would be in the club having a conversation with a woman, and women have come grab you out your seat.
I promise you,
a bunch of times.
Average man will not physically move when a woman comes and grabs him. I promise you that's not physically possible.
No, what I'm asking you is the fact that he doesn't move.
No, it's wrong.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to say.
No problem.
Because she can't physically move him, but the act itself is the same act.
And I'm saying to you that it is wrong. I think it's a two-pronged conversation, and physical abuse in any case is wrong.
And we have to have the conversation because the culture has normalized it on both ends.
Okay, that's fine. And we can be done with it. And I feel like a lot of brothers are out here talking about, you know, respect the man, I'm a man, and what that looks like. And if it doesn't look like having the discipline that you will not in public violate, embarrass, and disrespect with your physical ability that is clearly more dominant than a woman. If you don't have that type of discipline, then don't come tell me about being a man. Okay. Don't tell me about that.
I hear you, but you
want to have the last word because, listen to me.
You know, I'm an advocate. Like, I cannot. You're not going to do anything to a woman in front. It's just not going to happen. Like, it's never going to happen. But what I'm asking is, are we having that same criteria? Is you a woman putting her hands on a man? Does that exclude her from womanhood? Is that less? Is her lack of discipline?
I think it does show a lack of discipline.
I mean, but when you just said, listen to me, what you just said is, no. I just want to let me say what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because you said if a man doesn't have the discipline enough not to put his hands or grab anything to a woman, then he can't talk about being a man. And I'm asking you, if a woman doesn't have that same discipline enough not to put her hands on a man, can we say that she's not a woman?
I think it's very childish. Okay. And I think it's very childish. And I will say again that there is a difference in the physical ability of men and women.
I think that,
and I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. And I think you're right. A conversation needs to happen again across the board. People need to not put their hands on each other. But the problem that I have with this conversation even is the equivocation that because we're talking about something that actually happened yesterday or the day before yesterday, that we need to now bring up what women have done also instead of us being able to deal with the fact that this happened and there are a lot of
men. I don't think that we're not dealing with it. I think that my position was that it's wrong. It is totally wrong, and you asked me why. Your question is why don't people care, and I had to break it down to why it is, because when you can see Solange do that, or you were in a club with a dude dance with a dude, and you see a girl walk up behind him and start hitting him, and
a dude dancing with a girl, and somebody come up behind and hit him, and
beat him up, and it's a number one meme, and everybody's laughing and joking, ain't nobody saying, yo, that's messed up. So I understand what your point of view. Because for me, I'm physically too strong. I'm not going to do anything to a woman because don't matter what you do to me, you can't really hurt me. So my first thing is to restrain you and harm you. So I don't see a need to return fire or harm you.
Fire, whoa.
Return fire because they're firing.
You talking about the woman walks up to the...
Because the woman is firing. Just think about it. She's firing. Lord. That's firing. Look, well, if you throw punches, that's what they call firing.
Some fire is... Sold Not For Sale mixtape.
Oh,
the mixtape is out.
There you go. That was a good segue.
That is...
Let me talk about it.
You know, we're the Critics Corner, Linda and me specifically. Yes. We listen to everything that you say and read everything you write with a very fine tooth comb.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that I'm very proud of your growth because I certainly have seen it. And our sister Carmen was talking about that yesterday, just how much you have grown.
Yeah, she sent me a lovely text. Thank you, Carmen.
You have grown so much. And as I'm listening to Soul Not For Sale, the mixtape, I hear so much passion and so much. And just, I mean, I don't feel like you developed as an artist because you've always been a great artist to me. And I just think people need to listen and really take the time. Because I think folks, if it's not in rotation on the radio, it takes them a longer process to actually sit down and listen, and the world is moving so fast that folks that even they want to, but they just can't, you know, for whatever reason. But I sat down, I was hearing different songs at different times in different spaces, but I sat down and I listened to every single song, every single word, and I have to say that there are really, really some dope tracks on this mixtape. So shout out to you. Congratulations.
Yeah,
you did
man.
A really, 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 really good job. So how does it feel? And talk about the process and the whole...
Well, for me, man, I've put together... This is like the third project that I've created in the last few months, man. Shout out to my boy Chris Gotti at Adventure Music.
We need something for shout outs around here.
Shout outs. We shout out.
Because we just believe in always
giving everybody props,
around us love.
Just give them love, man. Chris Gotti had been reaching out to me for a while. Like, yo, I want to do some music with you. I want to work with you. I think you dope. I always thought you was dope. I love what you stand for. And, you know, and then one day we were at the Rucker. I mean, not the Rucker. We were in the Dykeman Playground. Mm. And then we just started building. He's like, come to the studio. And then I went to the studio, and we just started working on a project. We did a project, you know, that we already created. We had it's another project that you heard some of the tracks on, but we got about 20 songs, and it's so, like, dope you know, and we waiting for the right time to release it. So while I was waiting, I'm like, you know what? Let me just put something out. I want to put a mixtape out that, because it was a feel. It was just a feel. Because
people want to know, why not the album?
Why not the album? But I was like, it's a setup. Because the album, to me, is even doper than this. But I think this is dope. Mm. But the album touches on so many different subjects and stories. There's so many different things on the album. But this mixtape, for me, was something that was like a 2.5-week process that we went to, and we found some tracks that just married and had a feeling. And, you know, So Not For Sale is a clothing line that I work with my partner, Lil Man. You know,
Lil Man, the tallest dude I ever met in my life, but he's Lil Man.
He started the company, started the So Not For Sale brand a few years ago, and then we started partnering on it a couple of years ago, in which, you know, he's was the founder of that. And I say, you know what? This is something that represents me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, that's where our partnership came. And I was like, this mixtape should be named that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like that's always been
soul,
my mantra.
Not for sale.
My soul has never been for sale. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I haven't been able to get recognition. I haven't been able to get on certain platforms and certain situations that I believe I deserve. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything that I lack musically. I don't think that there's anything that I lack in the entertainment, personality, all of those things. I believe that I have all of the things necessary to be an elite artist in this field. But
yeah,
the fact
agree.
that I don't, you know, I don't go about it a certain way, and I don't kowtow, and I don't bite my tongue, and I don't feel I need to do things to fit into certain rooms is probably why I haven't. That's just my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. So this music was to reflect that. You know, I wanted this music to reflect it, and then also have essence of what it is that I represent.
Right.
The movement, you know, how it is.
Yeah, because in almost every song, it seems like you touch on just, you know, the movement and not even so much the movement. That's one part of it. But just like common sense things and just like real authentic talk specifically to young people about choices that you've made, decisions you've made, and ways in which they can not fall into those same traps. So I just think it's a really good project. I hope that people will download it. You say it's on
all every platform.
I've heard that a million
it's
times.
It's on all
platforms,
man. You know, because I really just wanted to, like, a lot of projects I put on a few platforms, but this one I really was like, this needs to be on all platforms, and it's completely independent. I've partnered with Adventure. Me and Chris Gotti, we just wanted to give it to the world. We didn't just promote it. We didn't do no big. We just said, you know what, this project for me is going to be like an R&B album. Mm. You know, R&B albums, they don't just go straight to the charts unless you just Beyonce or somebody. But what happens is they start to just grow slowly.
Right.
Like you build. Like, I don't mind building this project for the next 6 months.
Right.
Like, just building with it, because I know each song is so powerful. Like, I haven't heard one person that listened to this project that didn't have the sentiments you had. Like, people was like, yo, this is an epic body of work. Like, it's the feel of it is just so real and authentic that it took me somewhere else. It's not nothing like that's out now. It still feels current, but it has a feel and a vibe that just empowers you. It makes you just feel something.
And I was studying your Instagram stories and really sort of studying what people felt about it, and I noticed that you're already starting to have certain songs that have a trend, like Rain.
Rain
that
has
seems
a trend.
To be a
Broke
know,
No
one.
More with my
Broke
boy,
no more.
Therese Deshawn,
So
Not
other?
For Sale
Soul
with
not
Connie
for sale. And it seemed like a lot of people around certain songs that I also felt, you know, I had a good feeling about, and you can see it translating into what the public is saying. So, you know, Harry Belafonte said something one day that I thought was so powerful, and it stuck with me. He said that when he saw how Paul Robeson was being blackballed, you know, Paul Robeson was a revolutionary, you know, and he spoke truth to power. And anytime you did that, especially back then, you could be blackballed. And he said he started to see what was happening with him. And so he decided to continue as Harry Belafonte, this fine black man, successful rich man. He decided to still continue to do the chicken circuit, like to still do small clubs and to stay down, stay 10 toes down, connected to the people, never get too high where they can take it from you, right? And I feel like in your situation, although it's topsy-turvy, it's been difficult, you have built such a strong and authentic relationship with people on the ground that no matter what, they support you. Because everywhere we travel, speaking, and whatever it is that we're doing across this country, organizing, people love you. And they come out and they support you, and they treat you just like they do any other celebrity. So, you know, I think it's great. I think you have the right model, but I know it's frustrating at times to just know where you were and to have this be the new direction that you've had to take, but it's obviously God's walk for you.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, I'm building it in authenticity, man. Yeah. I'm not compromising myself. I'm putting out music that doesn't have to go with status quo. It doesn't have to have a certain sound that is current. It just has what I feel.
Right.
Like, I'm able to put my music in how I feel, and people are really just gravitating to it. So I'm just, like you said, I'm blessed to have people that love me regardless of the statue or what's going on, or radio play. Like, people have been on my page like, yo, we need a project. And, you know, that was my process for it. Like, I just wanted to give my hardcore fans, people that really want and believe in me, something to listen to. So I'm grateful for the way that y'all have received it, you know, and I'm going to continue to push it. We're going to probably shoot a video for every song, because I feel like everything on it is visual and heartfelt. You know, probably might make a mini movie called So Not For Sale.
Oh,
to
Oh, Lord. You now know. We have to make it a
you
movie.
You got to, because...
But you need to still focus on your album, so...
But it's a part of it, though. You know what I'm saying? I want the...
It's a build-up.
I want the music to be the soundtrack for the movie, because it's so real.
That's dope. That is super, super, super dope.
Yep.
Tell people again how you can actually...
Yes, you can go to my page.
Which page?
You can go to my Instagram page, My Son, NY General, and you can click the link in the bio. It goes straight to my website, and you can purchase it there. Or it's on every other platform in the world that you want to. It's on Tidal, Spotify, Apple Music, any other platform that you'll go to. You can stream it. And, you know, we just need
the support. So for people that don't have Instagram, they could go to your website.
You can go to my website.
And purchase it, which is?
It's mysonnyg.com. It's mysonnyg.com. And you can go right on my website and just purchase it by yourself.
mysonnyg.com. People should know, just in case they forget, that means mysonnyorkgeneral.
Yes, sir.
.com.
Yes, sir.
That's good.
Yes, sir.
And that was such a high to talk about your album. And I hate to go bring up the Senate stuff again, and but we have to make sure, as this show is called Street Politicians, that we educate our audience and that we become educated on what's happening from a political perspective. I just think America's in big, big, big trouble. And we
you
always
think?
Have been.
You think?
But this is really... When white folks get scared, then black people should be terrified. Like, and white people
are scared.
Like, there are many white people. I have been meeting white folks who are staunch Republicans. They are Republican. Their granddaddy was a Republican. Their grandmama was cooking pies for the Republican convention. Mm-hmm. Their children are Republicans. They are Republicans. And they are struggling with supporting the Republican Party right now. Many of them have, for the first time in their lives, in 2016, for the first time in their lives, they voted on the Democratic side. But even if they didn't then, because they still were so tied to it, now as we move towards the 2020 election, they're like, there's no way I can support this. They're right. I mean, and I'm not saying the let's not even get into it, because I'm not saying at all that the Democrats are anything better. But I do know that President Trump is probably the most dangerous man in America.
He is.
And the party that supports him is definitely not for us.
And that's just always been my point of view. Like, people always say, oh, you Democrats and you talk. I'm bipartisan.
You're bipartisan. That is. You're bipartisan.
I'm bipartisan.
Okay. Because
the reality of the situation is, because I want you to understand my position. Because if I seen somebody.
If I saw somebody.
If I had already seen, or if I saw somebody that was in. the Republican Party that represented my interests,
right,
I would vote for them.
But that's real shit.
That's what I'm trying to tell
like,
you.
For
like,
real.
People think that I care about a party. I don't
that's
give
real
a
shit.
Damn about a party.
That's
you
real
think
shit.
I care about a party?
If they gave
if
me somebody.
If somebody of the Republicans was talking to my needs and the things that's going on in black communities and really was helping us and understood, I would vote for them. But the problem for me where I have a disconnect is you can't tell me that a party ran by white people.
Mm-hmm.
98% of
the Democrats, there's white folk over
there
too.
No, they're all over there. But I'm talking about 98% of them are white people that come from privileged communities that I don't come from.
The leadership.
The leadership.
That's a
and
fact.
And even the people that over they only have two black people in their party right now that are in office.
In the Senate.
In the Senate. So you can't explain to me that white people know more about me and what's for me than we do.
But everybody
that
on the Democratic
me,
stage
though.
Right now, they're all white people.
But what I'm trying to
who th- come from privilege.
What I'm trying to tell you is because that we've narrowed it down, but there were people on that stage. There are people there are hundreds of people in the Democratic Party that look like me.
And when we okay, so let's be clear about
let's
what we're
be
saying.
Clear.
Because you know it's gotta be clear. So what you're saying is that when you see the leadership, all the folks that are hired, the people moving and shaking within the Republican Party.
Yes.
98% of them are white folks.
Yes.
That's leaders. And most of the leaders.
And they're not,
not
poor,
talking
they're
about
not
every
poor
people,
white people that come from the same.
Well, some of them may have started with,
but
you know.
But 90% of them are
but
not.
They probably
so
did.
If we
majority,
go there, if we take away
leaders,
the 8%, leaders.
The leadership. That's important.
Okay, but
clarification.
But I need
or
to understand this. How many people actually are in office that are black Republicans?
Well, no. Okay, well, wait.
How many black Republicans have they actually voted into office?
Okay, but I'm saying, I'm just trying to go slow. Because people
okay.
don't necessarily understand. They hear things and they go and they'll say, oh, 98% of Republicans. My son said that 98% of Republicans come from privilege, which wouldn't be true because the body, the Republican Party's body, just like every other body, when you start to trickle down, it's just everyday people who are part of the party. But from the top in the leadership positions, you're saying that the leadership is basically a bunch of privileged white
what
folks.
What I'm asking
so,
you is
no,
this.
No,
no,
I,
no. What I'm saying
you.
Is this.
Mm-hmm.
How many Republicans are black that are in office?
No, not in office. It should
what do you
be
mean?
Because in these little towns
uh-huh.
across the country, there may be
no,
public.
No, but I'm trying to tell you, that's not. I've done the study.
Well, but, you got to show me
from the Congress, the Senate, all of these things.
See,
listen
that's
to me.
What I'm trying
governors
to say.
Governors and different. Listen to me, Tim. They're about probably about
Tim
three
Scott,
of them. They're
exactly.
about three of them. But, I want you to understand this, and I'm telling you, I've done the study because I wanted to understand. Why people are saying that we need to switch parties. I actually wanted to understand it.
Yeah.
And I've had debates with other people who are telling me they're black Republicans. And they cannot name to me a double-digit amount of black people that are elected officials in any state in America. Elected officials are Republicans.
Right. But there is a difference between elected officials and the leadership of the party.
But the leadership is even worse than elected officials.
I know.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
What I'm saying is that I don't know.
Okay.
You are probably right.
Because I've
but
studied.
But I do not
I look,
know
I want to understand.
That across the country, in every single state senate seat and all these other city councils.
But
and
I do.
I don't know that they don't have black people.
They don't. I'm telling you.
Okay.
The one, and they had a woman that just said that she felt like a black woman, I forgot her name, and we should look it up, but she was just talking about how she felt that they completely were against her, that it was racism, there was chauvinism, everything.
As a black woman,
a black Republican woman, she was supposed to be the next of the party. They had a lot behind her, and she got out of there. And I'm trying to tell you, it was about three of them.
All I'm just
I'm
saying
telling you, I'm not making this
is
up.
Is that there's some people, you know, it would be really sad if, it, you know, when you show me that,
yes.
It's really sad.
It's going to be
but
sad.
Nonetheless, in the Democratic Party,
yes,
you are right. There are many more people of color who are in leadership positions However, mm-hmm. in terms of Senate seats, mm-hmm. not that many. Corey, Kamala, it's not like you're saying that on the Democratic side, there's so many more.
They are. But that's what I'm trying to tell you. You saying it's not that many. And the not that many that we have is that much more than they have on the other side.
I know. Let's look at that.
Look it
because
up.
What I think, though, is that what we should be saying, which would support your position 100%, is that I know for a fact Mignon Moore, Leah Daughtry, and other women who have been a part of the party leadership. Mm-hmm. So there are black women who are part of the party leadership, even black men. Michael Blake,
Tamika,
who is
hear everything you're saying, and you're 100% right. But what I want you to know is that I get it. You don't want to go on a limb and say something.
No,
because
it's not. I mean,
because
not
you
going
probably
on a
don't
limb.
Even believe that what I'm saying. Because you like
it's
it got to be
that I'm
more.
Not going
I'm
on a limb.
You,
I'm just saying
happening.
That I think it's important for us to be clear about.
I'm clear because I was listen to me because when Kanye and these people was talking about this and that and how
you see and it goes back sometimes.
Listen to me,
like Carol Moseley Braun. I'm just trying to see.
This is who I'm talking
sure.
about. Yeah, just look it up. I promise you, you gonna be surprised because I couldn't believe it that black people was actually telling me that this is what I needed the party I needed to vote for.
Tim Scott.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think he might be the only black
I'm trying
person.
To tell you.
And then, but all I'm saying is that on the Democratic side is two. So you're saying that one more is better than one less.
Yeah.
I'm saying, and I agree with you, that across the board, in terms of the leadership of the Democratic Party, which is not just people in elected office, the Democratic Party and all parties' leadership is not just people who've been elected to serve in a political office. There are people who are running the different committees. There are people who are running the party. And it is very true that the diversity in the Democratic Party is much more in line with who we are and our mission and also much more representative of the communities that we support than the Republican Party. So we're on the same page about that. Where I was getting worried is around saying that all the elected officials, and I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just saying that would be really sad.
But it is. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's sad. I'm trying to tell you, it's really sad because
right.
I actually Googled it and I studied it for about 2 days because I was like, why would somebody tell me to vote for somebody that never came from where I come from, don't look like me, don't have any cultural identification in me, and tell me that they know more about what's best for me than I do?
Well,
that doesn't make sense.
Okay, so then if that's the case, let's see who we gonna cross out here of the candidates. Bloomberg.
Definitely.
Out.
Gone.
Biden.
Yeah, I can't vote.
Out.
I can't.
Who else you got?
We got
up
Bernie.
There on the stage.
Bernie's my guy.
You know, I like Tom Steyer, but you know, he might have to. He's out because.
Yeah, don't
worry. Bernie. If by your definition that they don't come from where I come from, they don't understand my issues.
That's not really, you can't
almost
say that
none
about,
of them.
But I'm just saying, Bernie has been in the struggle with us for years.
Oh, man.
You know, we can't act
okay.
like he ain't been there, though.
All I'm saying is,
whether you agree, he's
you
been
could,
there.
He's been, he definitely has protested. He has been a part of, you know, civil rights issues. He has definitely carried the torch on behalf of the civil rights movement in different situations. In different
he's
situations.
He's been a white ally.
But I would challenge that none of the people who are currently running for president deserve our vote in the way in which we have to vote for them now because of the fact
think,
that we got to get this guy out of office.
I think the only time in history I felt like that was with Obama.
And he is questionable.
Exactly.
But,
I don't think we love Obama personally. Exactly. But I don't think I've ever felt like somebody had to get my vote. I don't think nobody's
well,
made
we,
me
they
feel
do
like
have
that.
To because we have to get rid of Trump.
Yeah, but I'm trying to tell you, I've never felt like the closest I felt after Obama was Bernie, because he spoke directly to things that were
his platform is the most bold.
It is, and you know, and it's a new way of thinking. He challenges the system, and he says, "Look, why can't everybody go to school for free? Why can't everybody have health care? No, they can. We just got to make sure some of these billionaires a little less rich, and we can support everything. Y'all want to Y'all find ways to do everything, but these are the most important things in the world. Your life and your education are the most important things. So why is that something? So why is that something that people have to have money to get? Like, it doesn't make sense. So I'm with that.
I hear you, and today, you know what? On our next episode, we should really talk about these candidates.
Yeah, we can break them down.
We haven't really talked about them.
We got a long time. You know what I'm saying?
This will be going on for the rest of the presidential cycle.
We got some time to talk about this.
Yeah, but we do need to like really analyze these different folks because it's so much happening. You know, that we were going to talk about the Super Bowl ads. I just really wanted to throw up when I watched. Did you watch?
I don't watch anything that has to do with Super Bowl.
You can't tell me you didn't see Shakira and J-Lo shaking around.
Anything. I don't watch the NFL and I don't watch Super Bowl. Not in my house.
Oh, you don't watch the NFL either. No, none of the games. You don't support any of the teams. So why now, when you have been very vocal about your support for Jay-Z. Like, you really want to see Jay win with what it is that he says that he's working on.
Exactly.
I think we all want to see him win. I certainly do. Even the toughest critics want to see what Jay has set forth to do actually come to fruition.
Okay.
Because it needs to.
And that's when I will watch the NFL. See, I'm applauding Jay because supporting.
I'm not trying to change your words.
No, I'm saying both, because to have the wherewithal to take the criticism about what it's going to take to transform a situation, you know, an organization that's been historically, you know, racist, but has profited off black bodies and will continue to profit off black bodies, and to say to yourself, okay, they're going to continue to profit off black bodies. So how do we make it to where these black bodies have a say, to where we start to create ownership inside something that's been profiting off us for years, labor has been profiting off us. How do we start to transform and start make it culturally sensitive, make people culturally identify with our things? That takes a lot, because you're going to be called every name in the world. So I applaud that, because everybody's not willing to do it. Some people are willing to sit there from their house and say, oh, you could have did this, and you can buy this, but they don't do nothing. So I applaud anyone willing to take those stripes, you know, take those whippings on the back. And the reason why I still don't watch the NFL is because what Kaepernick stood for was real. You know, we are being killed at higher rates. We are being ignored. Black bodies aren't being valued. You know, and the NFL punished him for that. So I still have a problem with that. Although there are, you know, things that I've expressed that I have disagreements with both of them on. But the reality is,
both of whom?
Kaepernick and Jay-Z. I have disagreements on both of their approaches in the situation. But the reality is, I want to see, like you said, I want to see Jay succeed in his plight to try to diversify and change what's wrong within the NFL and make it a more level playing field. I want that to happen. But until I see that happening, until, you know, because right now there's the product. It's like building a house, but I'm not going to move in a house until it's built. So I'm hopeful that that he's gonna do what he set out to do. Yesterday I watched him I seen it on Instagram and I reposted where him and Beyonce never stood for the national anthem. So to me that shows that we're doing business, but the issue at hand that America doesn't respect black people is still something that's dear to me. And I don't want you to believe that because I've decided to come in here and try to transform this for my people that I sold them out. So there's going to be different views. Everybody has a different point of view. But for me, I'm not watching it until I see the work that they say they want to do actually get done.
And I hear you. And I have very deliberately taken a position of not speaking too much on this NFL situation, because I also want to see what Jay-Z is doing. Understanding, it's not like my relationship with, or my when I say relationship, I don't want it to be misconstrued that I'm saying that I have a personal relationship with Jay-Z. But my relationship, just in terms of knowing what he's done for many of the families in the movement, how he's been supportive of organizations financially and other resources that he has given to support different organizations, not necessarily an organization that I was leading, But definitely, I know that he's done a lot. And so when he stepped out there with the NFL, while I had very serious and specific issues around some of the talking points, the optics of the whole thing, Cap's involvement, I also still feel that what he's saying, what he's trying to do is really coming from a very real place. At the same time, I support Colin Kaepernick. And I support his movement. I support what he stands for. And I think that the NFL by itself, just the NFL, without all the issues, the brothers, you know, Jay-Z, Colin, Eric Reed, all of that, just the NFL itself is trash. That's what I feel. So how do you reconcile all these things? It's difficult. And I feel that from my perspective, I could go analyzing everything and shooting at this one and saying what I feel about some of Colin, in my opinion, my personal opinion, some of his missteps. I could go about talking about what I feel. And all that does is add to what I feel has been very divisive in our communities, because it has been extreme. This has been probably one of the most divisive issues that we, that I personally have seen in a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And I just don't feel like I can help by being, you know, by being, because really, I would say the jury's out on both sides with me. We're going to see what happens. I still think Colin Kaepernick should have a job in the NFL, period, point blank. He should be playing. But I also understand that there's a bigger picture here that has to be addressed, and that is how our communities, these players come from communities that need to be supported, uplifted. And so how does that happen at the same time while you deal with Colin's issues? There's a lot. And everything that we see, even in our expert places where we all experts on different issues, we're not always able to really have a conclusion, you know? So I struggle internally with it. But I also sit and work with Roc Nation, right? Like, I sit with them, and I've been working with them to see how we can advance the cause. So it's a lot. But they know. Everybody knows me. I'll still say what it is that I feel.
Do they know me?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So that's why I don't watch the NFL yet.
But anyway.
The ad.
That Trump's ad, which I thought was interesting, that there's been so much turmoil between black folks and the NFL, but yet Trump chose to place his advertisement specifically targeting black people during the show. I'm still, maybe there's some numbers that I don't know about, but the last I checked, the NFL was having issues with black viewership. I don't understand why he chose that venue to place a black ad. But, you know, whatever. There's a bunch of conspiracies I could come up with around what they think about us and the fact that sports is like the only place where we actually pay attention, but that's a whole different conversation. But the advertisement basically was about criminal justice reform. And he's basically touting his record on criminal justice reform. You know that the First Step Act has helped to free many people. I think Van Jones says like 7,000 people have gotten out of prison since President Trump has been in office. A lot of people work with him on that, Topeka Sam. And we are all for the fact that government is doing what it's supposed to do. Like, right? That's what you're supposed to do. Help to free people who shouldn't be in prison. Mm-hmm. However, he uses one woman who was free. That's the woman, Alice Johnson, who Kim Kardashian supported.
Okay. Yeah.
Supported.
Yes, sir.
He used her to create this ad around and pretty much said, you know, I'm the only one that can get this done, mm-hmm. right? Like, some people talk about criminal justice reform, but I'm actually making it happen. And I just thought to use this black woman and her story as a prop, while at the same time you participate in racist behavioral patterns and put people in serious danger. And just the other day, blocked African countries from being able to come to the United States. It's called on social media, hashtag the African ban. It really, really bothers me that you would use this woman. You know what I mean?
Well, we understand that Trump is a businessman. Everything he do is strategic. You know, when he freed up from the beginning, it was about strategy. You know, when Kim Kardashian came and she's one of the most well-known people in the world and she pleaded with him. And what a lot of people don't understand was, you know, there was a lot of situations within Obama's administration where he commuted the most people in history because they shot down bills that would have allowed people like Alice to be set free.
Right.
So when they denied the bills that would her crime wasn't even supposed to, she wasn't supposed to get out. It would have been hundreds of thousands of people that have been out.
Right. If what he was trying to do was done.
But nobody wants to have those conversations.
Right. That's true.
You know, so
that's a fact.
This is a fact. So when he wasn't able to do that, he started commuting sentences, which he was over 1,000 people. He commuted their sentence,
right,
means that he freed them, and he signed an executive order to let people free. He wasn't able to get to Alice Johnson before, but she was on the list of one of the people that he was supposed to be free. But people don't have these conversations.
Right.
They don't have real live conversations about that. But her case is so drastic. When you look, a mother who was sentenced to life for drugs and things of that nature, who had served how many, over 20?
She served a long time. She was in jail for like 30 years or something like that.
So when you look at it, it seemed like, wow, she shouldn't have been there. And he utilized that to play on the strings and the heartstrings of America to say, I've done something. Look, I've done that. Not saying that these judges that you put in are going to make sure that most of our kids never come
home
from prison.
Exactly, because the federal judges that they have been putting in office, that's the thing. It's like they're letting people out the front door for the cameras.
This is the bait and switch. What they're going to do is,
bait and switch.
The people that go into jail now, you're going to have hell getting out of there.
Right.
So they're letting people in. Okay, these people have been here over time. We're going to let them go. These crimes, we're commuting this. But when you go into this facility from now on, for the crimes, the minimums are going
to
be raised.
Yeah,
the criteria,
all
of these things are going to be different because they're opening new jails for a reason. They're not just opening new jails because, you know what, we want to stop crime. We're going to make sure that we let people go. No, they're opening new jails because they plan to fill them.
Right.
So this is a tactic that people don't understand that Trump pulls. So he knows what he's doing. He's been a reality TV star. He knows reality TV sells.
And he knows
sells.
How to play.
He knows how to play
through the media. But and there's some folks that's like, all I care about is black people and black. But you can't support a person who says, I freed some folks from jail, but yet they have thousands of families, Mexican families and African families that they never really show you in the media, separated at the border with children in cages, children dying, families dying, people who have lost their children forever and will never see
them
again.
That's right. Those are people they need to get. So listen to me. If y'all smart, you'll go get those people. You'll go get the exonerated five who Trump said that he deserved to get the death penalty. Those are the people you get.
Who are you talking to when you say if y'all people want
to
go?
I'm
like
talking
who?
To all the presidential candidates. The rest of the presidential candidates, if you want to do something, he just brought Alice Johnson out, and we're so happy that she's home because she deserved to be home. But let's talk about the people that he kept in cages. Let's talk about people like the Exonerated Five that he put out full-page ads to say that they deserve the death penalty. And never, even to this day after they were proven, DNA proved that they were innocent, he never even gave those men an apology.
No, actually, he doubled down and was like, yeah, you know, I don't know about that. But, you know, and back to the federal, the federal judges piece is so important. Because I don't know about...
They're rolling back civil rights.
I don't know about the average person. Well, that's what his whole Supreme Court play was. The reason why he needs to stack the Supreme Court is because... And even he said, in reference to impeachment and other things around, where he's been found to be engaging in criminal activity, he even said, that's okay, we'll take it to the highest court.
That's
you know why? Because he knows that the court is stacked it's not really in his favor yet. And God, let's hope that Ruth Bader's Ginsburg, that she stays as healthy as she can. And I don't want her to stay healthy just so she can hold the court, but in general. But he's trying to stack that court with Supreme Court nominations and Supreme Court, confirmed seats that will give the Republican Party the upper hand with the courts, so that whenever there are major cases like Roe v. Wade, which would reverse abortion and other really important things that they find to be problematic. They don't want us women to have our rights, civil rights, you know, all these different things that people fought, lived, died for. They want to turn those things back. They know that the Supreme Court can do it. And so that's one level. But you also need the federal courts to advance these things to the dang on Supreme Court. So they're stacking. We playing chess. Well, know what y'all say? We playing checkers, and they playing chess. We over here arguing about, you know, who don't like who, and did Bernie say this to Elizabeth, and what she think, and she's a liar, and he's this, and Bloomberg's ugly, and so-and-so is this. Biden is nibbling on his wife's finger while at an event in front of everybody. I mean, we dealing with all of that. Meanwhile, these people are in power positions, putting people in place to be able that when Trump is long gone, they would have changed things in our Constitution. They would have reversed very serious our rights, as you said. This is some serious shit.
No, it's very serious. It's extremely serious.
Super serious.
We need to take it serious, man. You know, Trump is such a dangerous but hilarious person. It's hilarious because he congratulated. I don't watch the Super Bowl, but you know, I seen.
But you heard
that he congratulated Kansas City on their huge win by saying, "You represented the great state of Kansas, and in fact, the entire USA so very well. Our country is proud of you."
Right,
you talking about now as a president, somebody of just
the basic
grade school. You would know that Kansas City is not in Kansas. This is the president of the United States doesn't know that Kansas City is not in Kansas. Mm. But this is the person that is the leader of the free world.
It was a post
Lord
and delete.
Have mercy.
I mean, it's a scary thing, and I think my final point that
Lord
I would just make is
mine's
that
is Lord have mercy.
But, I mean, it is Lord have mercy. It's serious. And, you know, and Lord have mercy on us. I was coming into the studio today, and I passed a man in the train station who was sitting there, and his legs was just riddled with sores, and he just looked sick. I mean, he was swollen, so there's disease in his body. I mean, he was big, and he had sores everywhere on his body. And I was just looking at him, and I started praying loudly, Lord, help us. Like, help us. Like, why have thou forsaken us? Like, what is this? You know, because he's one of so many people. The homelessness in New York and across the country is out of control. And yes, it is diverse, because I saw a white couple. I pass them all the time.
We all,
and I give
like
the
most
white,
of us, are one check away from being homeless.
Well, this is true. I give this white couple, they sleep on the ground on the street in New York, and I give them every time I see them. And the woman, now she knows me. She's like, yeah, man, how you doing? You know, but it's a lot of our people, a lot of black people who are out here homeless. Young people in Fordham Road on the Bronx,
On Fordham Road in the Bronx,
there's a little circle, and Cardi B gets her nails done there, so you know I know all about that. So I was coming from going to the nail salon one day, trying out her person, and as I was walking through this little square in the middle, it's a big shopping center for people who don't know, it's a lot of stores, a lot of folks go there. There were so many young people early in the morning sleeping on the benches all over the park. It was young people. I'm talking about 8 years old, 9 years old. They're homeless, sleeping in the park. And I thought to myself, this issue of black people in America still being considered slaves, that we don't have our full rights, that we don't. We're still in the Constitution considered to be 3/5 human. That has never been changed. We think about the 13th Amendment, which says that we are free unless we commit a crime and end up in prison, in which at that point you can be sentenced, if you will, to indentured servitude, which is how we end up making products for every corporation, answering the phone for the DMV. We're in prisons working, and when you get out of prison, because you have a criminal background, you can't even get a job for the same company you were working for while you were in prison. The deck is stacked against us. It's stacked against us, and, you know, we don't have time to play around.
That's why you try to make light. I laugh at it because I told you, I watch it and it's a sham. Just watching this impeachment trial is a sham. Like, this man is literally running the White House like it's the mafia.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even a joke. Like, he's running with mafia rules. Like, he's running it like it's a gangster organization. And, you know, and that's what we're dealing with. So when you look at what's funny was him and Bloomberg are starting to have this exchange. Mm-hmm. You know, Bloomberg is somebody that we're not fond of, especially from New York. We understand his stop and frisk and how those things have definitely plagued black people in our city. But when you look at the tactics, they both have the same mentality because Bloomberg pretty much gangsted New York. He said, you know what, I'm going to get my term.
That's right.
I'm going to change. Like, he knows this.
No, but you got to explain that quickly because we got to wrap it up, but you got to explain when you say he just, because everybody, we not, you know what I'm saying?
So basically,
like, we talk to a broad audience.
Prior to Bloomberg, you were only able to run for two terms.
You can only, occupy
the mayoral seat for two terms. Mm-hmm. And he somehow enacted some law.
He changed
policy. Yeah. And they made him, he was able to have three terms as a mayor.
Right.
So this is what Trump is doing. So this is familiar to Bloomberg. So Bloomberg is using the same exact tactics. He's talking about somebody. Bloomberg is talking about his hair and talking about his skin. And he's using the pig pen tactics, man. He's going, they go, like Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high. No.
Bloomberg said,
when they go low, we just go a little bit lower.
You know
what I'm saying? So, and I tell people all the time, that's what it's going to take to beat Trump. You cannot be politically correct. You cannot be this calm, savvy person, because he is talking to a demographic of people who don't give a fuck. Like, literally, they fed up, they mad, they've been feeling like their country has been taken over by these immigrants and by these blacks and people being celebrated. He's saying, nah, we gonna get this back. Mm. So, and if somebody ain't over here talking to their base the same way he's talking to his, you cannot beat this man. I want y'all to understand this. This man is playing a game.
Take off the gloves, right?
You got to take the gloves off. He is a celebrity.
Con artist.
Con artist. The man is a con artist.
Rapist.
He has
sexist,
raped. Listen to me. This man is
fascist.
They got a rapist in the White House. He got hundreds of people who have accused him of
this. That was a hundreds.
I mean, I'm not talking about rape.
Yeah.
I'm talking about accusing him of criminal activities.
That's true.
Like, rape,
different
types. There's double-digit rape people who have accused
that's
him of rape.
True.
He has over hundreds of accusations of crimes.
Different types of crimes.
Different types of
stealing
crimes.
From the people who work for him, he wouldn't pay them.
The man is a criminal, man.
A black folk said he treated them like garbage while they worked in Trump, in his different Trump facilities. I mean, immigrants have issues with him. Then he had the Trump University, which ended up being a sham. And it's crazy how you can have a college, if you will, some educational institution that stole from people, that wasn't accredited, all these different things, and then you have to pay all these people back and still be the president. There's no way Obama could have done that.
Listen, we can have, listen
no
to me.
Way.
I'm going to stop because we can have
we
a
can
whole
move that.
Segment.
That's, we're going to talk
on
the, our next
the inequity,
needs to be all, I mean,
inadequacies of Donald Trump. We can have a whole podcast on
it
that.
It really needs to be.
But we're going to move on, you know, and kind of wind down, and we're going to get down to my I don't get it.
I don't get it.
Like, I just don't get it, you know.
We were talking about
my mixtape, and we were talking about certain other things where there's support, where we need support in the movement, and certain things, like, we do. And a lot of people behind closed doors, they come to us and tell us how good a job that we're doing, and they give us hugs, and they want to pick your brain, and they want to have conversations with you, and they want to figure out, and they want to do all these things in private. They They silently and privately celebrate you. But they never publicly support you. Mm. And I just don't get that. Mm. Like, to me, that's very... Like, I don't understand why... How do you know? And they're in positions, because most of the people I'm speaking about, they're in positions to just give a kind word. If they would tweet about something that you were doing most of the time, it could change your tax bracket. It could change your whole life. It could change the struggle that you're actually going through. It could elevate the movement. But most of these people don't do it. They'll tell you how they love what you do. They'll tell you how they celebrate you, how dope of a person you are, how they really feel you and they love you. But they will never, ever support you publicly. And I just don't get that. And, you know, and I want you at home to really come back. Because we've had this conversation all the time. Like, we go places, and, you know, based on the work that we do, that is really authentic and comes from a place of us really just wanting to see our people in better positions. We travel a lot, and we see a lot of people, celebrities, who come up and they talk to us and tell us, yo, I love the work you're doing to do this. But these same celebrities and people in power, they haven't done anything to help the work that we do. They haven't done anything to make the work that we do any easier. And, you know, and it really pains me. You don't have any obligation to it. None of us have any obligation to anyone. But I just want to understand, if you celebrate somebody, if you say you believe in them, if you say you respect them, and you say that what they're doing is so dope, why don't you see the need to publicly, I'm going to say it again, publicly support those people?
I don't get it either, so I have nothing to say on that, because, you know, it's a hurtful thing.
It's very hurtful.
When you know that people who you would imagine, and it's worse when you believe that somebody cares about you and they don't support you. No. But, you know, I found over time that God will just help you see things you need to know and makes your circle tighter and stronger, because those who have been with us have really been with us. And there are so many we can't even name. So, you know, God, what's the you always say this about when God sent the boat for Noah.
Yeah.
It was for Noah.
It was for Noah.
And he sent them the boat. First, he sent him what?
No, it wasn't Noah. It was
Wait a minute. Noah's Ark. Hold on. It wasn't Noah. No, yeah, no, I know. I'm wrong.
It's a tale where they said.
It's a tale.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not in the Bible.
It's not actually.
Because that thing's so good. Like,
it sounds biblical.
It does sound
biblical. But basically, God sent it was a man that was on sea, and he was waiting for God. He said, God's going to save me.
So he sent the boat. So right.
He sent the boat, and he was like, get on. He's like, no, God's going to save me. Mm-hmm. You know, then he sent somebody in a little canoe, and he said, God's going to save me. Then he said, a big ship, a helicopter. Mm-hmm. He said, no, I'm waiting on God, and then he drowned.
You did a black preacher thing with that. Black now preacher. You're in the helicopter. Nobody ever said.
They sent down the road. He's like, get on. He said, no, don't worry about it. God's going to save me. And he said, when he died, he drowned. Mm. And he got there, he said, God.
Talk, preacher, come on.
He said, God, I thought you was going to save me. I was waiting for you to come save me. He said, well, I sent you a boat. I sent you a helicopter. You know, I sent you a canoe. You ain't get it. So the moral of the story is, you know, you never know what help looks like. And we just got to be able to see it when it comes.
Right,
we also,
and not worry about who isn't. But be grateful for what God does send us.
I mean, I'm grateful for those who support us in private or the people who don't support us. But I'm not that type of person. You know, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm authentic. If I say that I care for you, if I say that I support you, then I'm going to let the world know. But for those of you who not that way and you want to secretly support us, we take donations.
Private donations.
You know what
donations.
I'm saying? You want to give private donations.
That's
and you
what's
wanna,
up.
That type of secret I can deal with. But don't secretly do nothing. You know what I'm saying? If you want to give secret
don't
secretly do nothing. But we appreciate donations. Until Freedom, you can go to our Until Freedom page, and you can donate to Until Freedom right now, because the work is always needs
it's
to be funded.
Ongoing.
So we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah,
another
good
episode. Like we said, we're not going to always agree. We're not going to always be right. But we're going to always be authentic.
Yeah. Peace.
That's how we own it!